This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Set me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life, and it resumes here in January of 2026, and thank you for joining us. And in case you're listening in for the first time, we are a international ministry to persons who struggle with porn addiction, sex addiction, and adultery. Surveys show that upwards of 70% of Christian men are viewing porn at some level, along with an increasing number of women. That's starting to hit the 40% mark. That's from a George Barna survey that came out about a year ago. And then with youth, the numbers are just exploding. So a friend I know who goes and speaks to youth told me that she split them off, the boys from the girls, and she took the teenage girls and she asked them to raise their hand if they struggle with pornography. And she told me that every single hand in that room went up. So this is something that is not going away. Porn is growing and gripping more and more people, the church. And at a younger, and I hate to say it, way too young age, and so naive moms and dads are giving their kids smartphones at the age of 5 now, and then their sweet little kid is going to school, and guess what? Butch is showing them at school the wrong pictures, especially the wrong age, and those young brains aren't able to handle that. And they can get hooked for life and get terrified of telling mom and dad. So what we see and what we hear is that the average age of first exposure to porn, it was age 8 with the men who come to us for help. So moms and dads, you got to be aware of this. So we offer counseling in person and by Zoom. We have people participate from Europe, England, other countries, Canada, counseling groups. I've written 9 books. You can get information on us at blazinggrace.org. We are a 501c3 nonprofit ministry. And I have with me today again, Rebecca, my 23-year-old daughter. She also works for the ministry, so happy new year to you.
Happy new year.
So I know this, I'm putting you on the spot. Give us some words of wisdom before we move on.
Oh boy. Words of wisdom for the new year. Try to read a few chapters of the Bible every day.
Okay, I'll take
that. That's my words of wisdom.
I'll take that. So my ritual has been the first show of every year to share my story. And so I'm going to do that again this year. And so I was born in a Christian home. We went to a Baptist church. And even though my family were believers, there were a lot of problems. I didn't hear the words, "I love you." It was rare, or if ever, I can't really remember it. There was physical abuse in our home. And then at the age of 14, I stayed home from school one day. I was sick, and a trusted female adult member of the family who lived with us walked in the room and molested me. And after that happened, something in my mind, a switch in my mind just shut off. Just the memory just vanished after that was done. It's like I could not come to terms with the reality that this had just happened, that So after that, I started sliding into depression, having problems with suicidal thoughts. I'd been attending church with my parents, and I walked away from the church. I threw myself into sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That was the kind of the theme of the day back in the 70s. I got involved with, did drugs with marijuana, cocaine, LSD, angel dust, hash. Did a lot of drinking. One night I drank so much that I slept in my vomit. It was a horrible hangover that went till like 5 o'clock at night the next day. It was just sheer misery. And I didn't realize at the time that what I was trying to do was medicate and escape the pain of all that I'd grown up with. And then one day at the age of 18, I had a .357 Magnum in my hand, and I was trying to get the courage to end my life. But thank God I didn't. And actually what happened was when I was holding it, somebody, a friend called, and I didn't tell him what I was thinking about doing, but that phone call helped ease me out of that. I did some cutting, and then there was the sexual side. It wasn't long before I, in my teen years, I got and figured out what masturbation was, and doing that multiple times a day along with pornography. The local 7-Eleven didn't have a problem selling me Playboy and Penthouse magazines, and then from there went to videos. Back then, there was no internet, so we had to buy a video, you know, buy a video, go rent it or something like that. And I was binging on that stuff at least once or twice a day. And then there was promiscuity. I got picked up an STD after a one-night stand with a woman at a bar. And there was promiscuity with other young women. And sex with prostitutes, that happened, in fact. I think my first sexual encounter was with a prostitute when my employer, back when I was working there in Southern California, gave me a prostitute for a birthday gift. And then the thing I regret the most is having an affair with a married mother of three children. And I played a big part in breaking up their family. And she got divorced with her husband. But the sick thing was he was having an affair on her at the same time. So it was just this insane world. The company I was working with, a lot of people were sleeping around. There was a lot of partying and drugs. So this is what I was exposed to. And my friends, don't think you can have a lot of unbelievers for a friend and have them not affect you. You have to have other Christians in your life, because the world will rub off on you. And the world was rubbing off on me big time. And back then, I was a part of the world. And so by the time I was in my early 20s, 23 years old, I was a depressed mess. Physically, emotionally, chemically, spiritually, I was a mess. And doing all those drugs really messes up the brain chemistry. And, you know, the cocaine one night did so much of that, my nose bled. And I remember going to church one night on a whim, and I didn't know it at the time, but God was calling me back to him. And it was a Sunday night, and who goes to church Sunday nights anymore? But I went alone. I was living with a woman at that time with her three kids that I mentioned. And I went to the church, and the pastor was giving a message on when Abraham was called out to leave his father Terah's home and go to a foreign land. And the pastor punched it and he said, there are some of you here right now who God is calling you to leave where you are and to go to another place. And that just speared me. And I knew it was like, uh-oh, he's talking to me. And but the problem was, once we start having sex with the person, we create a bond that is very difficult to break. And I, you know, been living with this woman for, I think, 2 years. And it took me another year before I could break up with her. And that's we started fighting a lot. And it just became more and more miserable. And it was hard to break up. And I left a couple of times and came back. But finally severed the relationship. and then started going back to church on my own, stopped dating girls who weren't Christians. I walked away from the drugs and the excessive drinking because just the hangovers, the headaches, who wants that? Just misery. But I didn't walk away from the porn. I just figured, what's the big deal? Because I'm doing alone, and I didn't walk away from the masturbation because of that. What's the big deal? I'm not hurting anybody. And, of course, the churches I was attending, I didn't hear them talk about porn or sex or masturbation or if sex was touched. It was very rare. So I just figured, you know, okay. And I wasn't being overwhelmed with guilt as I would be later at that point. You know, I guess you could call me a semi-baby Christian. And then I met Michelle, the woman who I would marry. We got married in 1989. For a brief period of time while we were recording, I kind of walked away from the pornography because, you know, the excitement and, well, the lust going on. But then after we got married, and I should say, like most naive young men, I thought getting married was going to fix my lust problem, but it made it 10 times worse. Because what happens is, in marriage, we bring along all of our baggage, all of our coping mechanisms, and we can't hide it, we can't stuff it, and it doesn't work. And so the way I had been dealing with stress had been to medicate with pornography or some form of lust or sexual sin. So just months into our marriage, I'm binging on porn and masturbation all over again, and I just felt like such a hypocrite. And God, I remember me and my wife, she's a Christian, she's a believer, we're going to church every Sunday. She doesn't know what she's married to. She doesn't know the mess I am. I had a lot of healing to do from all the abuse that went on. And then a year and a half into our marriage, I take a business trip. And the business trips, especially in the hotel rooms, always used to take me down when it came to pornography. I get into a hotel room, I offer like one really weak, half-hearted prayer, God help me not to fall, and then boom, down I go. Binging all night, get maybe an hour of sleep, and then go to visit customers the next day, just sheer misery. And then one night in a hotel room in 1991 in Ohio, porn was no longer enough. And I called a prostitute in my room and had sex with her. And I just felt so horrible and dirty and shamed and filthy after that. And when I was in the shower trying to like wash it off of me, the whole feeling of what I'd just done, I just felt slimed. And then I told my wife what I had done, and all the guilt was just weighing on top of me. And she just started sobbing and crying. And then I knew. I mean, I was 20, in my 20s at this point, 29. And I knew I was in serious trouble, and if I didn't get help, I could lose my marriage. And we went to a marriage retreat, a marriage conference. And there was a pastor leading it, and he smiled a lot while he was speaking and cracked jokes. And I thought, maybe I can talk to this guy. So during a break, I approached him. And I was terrified as I walked up to him. And I walk up to him, and I got my head down. I'm embarrassed. And I said, and I mumbled the words, I got this problem with pornography. And as soon as I said that, smile vanished, smile gone. And he got angry, and he just said, just stop doing it. Just stop. And I didn't say a word. I just walked away, put my head down, and I internalized the idea. That's it. This is what getting in help in the church means. I want no part of it. And even today, we still hear stories a lot like this where somebody went to somebody at the church, try to get help, and say, for example, a wife got told that, well, your husband's porn problem is your fault. Because you're not giving enough sex. We hear insane stories like this all the time. And spiritual abuse is rampant and connected to sexual sin in the church. So I went and found a 12-step group. Again, this is 1992. And It was a secular 12-step group, Sexaholics Anonymous. And I found it in the Yellow Pages, and I'm driving there, and I have all these visions of all these dirty, sleazy guys, rapists, child molesters, guys in deep T-shirts. And so I walk into the room. It was a psychiatric hospital, which is fitting. And there's about 15 men around the table, and everybody has to share their story. And we go around, and I'm shocked because every one of them is a Christian. One had been the senior pastor. One had been the worship leader. They're all believers, and they're all talking about the struggles with porn and sexual sin and adultery. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Because, you know, I don't hear about this stuff talked about in church. Not openly and certainly not effectively. And then when it came to me, you're supposed to tell when the last time you binge was. I lied. It had been 3 hours, and I told him it had been 3 days. But for the first time in my life, it was great to have a place where I could go and just unload and not have to fake it or to play games or put on the fake Christian Sunday smile and act like everything's all together. So I got a year and a half of abstinence. And then I went on a business trip and lost it. And I got 3 years of abstinence. And then I went out, and then we moved to Colorado. And this was, I think, around 1995. And then I lost it again. But this time, after I lost it, I didn't bounce back. And I floundered for the next 3 years in counseling and spending money in counseling. And so basically, at the end of 8 years, I was empty. I had done all this stuff, and I just went to God and said, God, look, read my Bible every day. I pray every day. I do all the things good Christians are supposed to do. I've been involved with ministry, spent a ton of money and time in counseling, gone to groups. I've sponsored people. I've done all this stuff, and I am empty. I am miserable. Either you're the God you say you are who can change lives, or this whole church thing is a big joke. It's just a big religious act. And in that moment, God showed me a picture of my heart, and I'd always thought it was, I don't know, somewhat good because I do, you know, I do whatever, good things, and it was pitch black. There was just nothing good in it. And then he starts leading me. I made him my last hope. It was either God or nothing. And he starts leading me into some things he wanted me to see. And then he starts, a couple months into it, he starts putting all these verses about seeking him in front of me. If you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. Seek God's face, seek his strength continually. And I realized I had never sought God in all my life and all those years going to church. I had sought money, ministry success, theology, doctrine, Bible knowledge, men and women, and all those things, but I had never sought God himself. So I launched myself on this, God, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to go after you hard with everything I've got. I'm not going to let go until you reveal yourself to me. And then just a couple weeks later, I'm in the book of 1 John. I'm in 1 John 4, where it says, God is love. Whoever abides in God abides in him, and he in God. And I just said, Lord, why is it every single time I read about your grace, I get depressed and your love? And the Holy Spirit spoke immediately, and he said words that changed my life. He said, because you don't believe it. And see, knowing the Bible and believing it and receiving in the heart are two different things. And what we believe is what drives our life, not just what we know. And so I had seen God like my earthly father at the time, and he's changed and grown a lot. But at the time, growing up, it always felt like he was out to smash me with any mistakes I made. And then for the first time in my life, I received the truth that God did love me. And this incredible burst of power, love, and joy flooded my heart. And I've never been the same since. And I said, finally, this is what I've been after in church all these years, but I've never found. I've been after and hungry for the abundant life, not just Bible knowledge, not just theology. I've been after real, true life. And then I've got all this joy and I want to help people, but I figure I'm a freak. You know, this whole thing with the porn and the sexual scene, because we don't talk about porn in church. So I figured, you know, I was like a freak, pervert, nut job when I was going through all that. But then I started doing all this research and found that surveys, this was in 2000, showing that half of Christian men are viewing porn, 20% of women. I just said, half? How could it be half? I almost lost my family and had a faith crisis in half. And we're, what, too gutless to talk about sex and porn and masturbation in church, and it's half? Well, today those numbers are at the 70% mark. When the iPhone came out in 2007, boom, the numbers shot up again. So this is a big part of what we do. We reach out to the sexually broken in the church. We reach out to the wives. We say, you are not alone. There is hope. There is a way out. So, Becca, as you've listened to my story, what goes through your mind?
It just shows how much you've changed, because every single time you tell your story, it just kind of sounds like a movie to me, because I can't see you doing those things. And people always ask me whenever we go to like a conference or a trade show, like, what are your thoughts when you hear all your what your father's done? And it's always like, it just shows how much he's changed and how much God's changed him. And I don't see him doing that. So it's just, it just shows how powerful a testimony is and why God gives testimonies and why he puts us through all these trials, makes us stronger. And you're a perfect example of that. And what you do is amazing. So
why aren't we talking about sex and porn in church?
I think it's the main reason is it makes people uncomfortable, and we don't want to do that these days because it's not fun, and that's just not nice to do, to make people uncomfortable. So that's, I think, is one of the main reasons. And also, leaders are doing it too. And if that's a big step, if they have to say, I'm involved in this, let me try to help these people, because they can't lead if they're in it too. They can't lead, help people if they're involved in it at the same time and haven't gone through the process of healing. So I think it's a part of that as well. You've been through it. You've done it. But you got out of it, and so you're able to help people through those steps. And I think that's missing in some leadership.
Well, and I always like to say, don't forget the wives. Because usually what happens with a lot of people is they think, okay, this is just a men's issue, but this is very traumatic and this is very painful for the wives. So we put an equal emphasis on the wife's healing as we do the man's healing. And I'm talking in the context of husband and wife, but there are a lot of women these days struggling with pornography and masturbation and adultery and sexual issues. So I remember we were in England, Becca, and we had a stand at a Christian show there, our booth, and a woman walked up talking to you, and she saw what our booth was about with the porn and the adultery, and she broke down crying, mm-hmm. sharing with you that she had lost her marriage to pornography. What was going through your mind when that happened?
My heart broke for her because she obviously didn't have help or resources for her marriage. It almost seemed like the look on her face, like, if only I had something like this, maybe things could have been different. So that broke my heart for her, just her saying we couldn't make it because we didn't have the help that we needed.
And that's where I want to leave off, is for 1 Corinthians 5, where Paul is confronting the church of Corinth for not dealing with sexual sin. He said, you are arrogant and you have not mourned. It should break our hearts that so many marriages are being ruptured by this stuff, when we have the living God who offers healing. and offers redemption and offers cleansing no matter who you are and where you are and what you've done. So if you're suffering and you're hurting, please reach out. Please let us help you. Men, wives, and youth, we work with them all. Thank you for joining, my friends, and we'll talk to you next time. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.